On April 22, 1997, thousands of people chased from their homes by the surging Red River pressed into a hangar at the Grand Forks Air Force Base to hear President Clinton offer words of comfort and support.
We have hardly ever seen such a remarkable demonstration of courage and commitment and cooperation and basic human strength, and we are very impressed and proud to be Americans when we see what you have done in the face of this terrible disaster.
In the audience, three neighbors listened: John Little, Pat Moen, and Susan Cutchall. All lived within a few blocks of one another. All three fled Grand Forks as the Red River spilled over dikes and poured into their homes after rising high above National Weather Service projections to crest at 54 feet, 26 feet above flood stage. The Moens and Cutchalls lived on Lincoln Drive, their backyards bordering the river. John Little's house stood a couple of blocks away on Chestnut. There was a sense of comfort, even relief, in the airbase hangar, a huge change from the confusion and terror described in the pages of Susan Cutchall's diary in the days leading up to the president's visit.
April 17, 97. It happened in the afternoon. The dike had four cracks at the end of Lincoln Drive. Siren blew. Police came, cars, fire trucks, helicopters, and I broke down. We packed clothes and cleared off the refrigerator and we were to 207 Chestnut, where we thought we would be safe. 1:15 Friday, we heard on the radio that the Lincoln gave in. It's going up. Lincoln Lagoon, they call it. We walked all the way home, not knowing what to expect. Two houses from us, you can see the water coming up. Tears fell down my cheeks. And the guard stopped us, and I said, "No, that's our house." I got up at 4:30 Friday. The sirens are going off, the phones are ringing. The woman I was staying with, Mary Ann Allen, woke me up and says, "That was a call for prayer." We did. And all I could do is imagine everybody praying to God to stop these waters. Because we can't. We tried. We went through town very, very slow, creepy. We were still scared because if that engine stalled, we're right in the middle of it. We thought we were going to air base. Instead, we went to Faith Community Church on the other side, and we thought we were safe. We got up at 7 a.m. to find out the water's getting closer and closer. So here we are, doing it again. And we went for shelter at the air base. And I told my husband, if it comes out this far, I'm leaving the whole state. I've had enough. I can't run away anymore.
By the time President Clinton toured Grand Forks, the Cutchalls and their neighbor, John Little, had been staying on canvas cots at the base for 3 days. Little, a wiry man with a shock of curly hair, moved to Grand Forks in 1969, but you'd never know it to hear his southern accent. The University of North Dakota English professor fully expected to be at the base another week or two.
I don't think the river's going to be going down much in a week. And I do enjoy visiting. And I'm enjoying watching the people. But it would be nice to take a shower.
Little had heard the gurgle of his basement filling the night before he evacuated, and like many at the base, he wasn't sure what condition his home would be in when he returned. But Pat Moen already knew floodwaters reached the rooftop of her two-story home. Her husband, a Grand Forks police officer, patrolled the area. Moen knew they would not return to 501 Lincoln Drive.
It's hard. In Lincoln Drive area, that whole neighborhood is a real close neighborhood. So it's hard.
Three weeks later, mid-May, Moen's neighborhood is deserted, the only sound a wind chime still hanging in her backyard. Some nearby homes were forced off their foundations by the force of the floodwater. Moen's blue 75-year-old home is marked off by yellow police tape. Inside, floors have buckled, half-dried mud is peeling off the kitchen counters, and her refrigerator is toppled over. Moen can't spend any time there. The home's musty flood smell brings on her asthma. At a restaurant on the other side of town, Moen says her neighborhood is destroyed.
And I look at my neighbor's houses and I cry. It's hard.
It's quiet in Grand Forks now that the Red River is back within its banks. As residents returned to their homes in the days following the flood, many directed their anger at the National Weather Service for its inaccurate prediction of the river's crest. An army of volunteers is still helping with disaster relief in Grand Forks, but the satellite farms of the TV crews have withered away almost to nothing, and the visits by national politicians have stopped. Pat Moen and her husband Jim are staying with her mother in a two-bedroom trailer. They've decided to move to North Carolina, where their daughter lives, when Jim retires from the police department in January. The Cutchalls, who lived a few blocks away on higher ground, are renting a rundown trailer in nearby Amarillo, not sure whether to clean up their house, which got about a foot of water on the main floor, or wait for a possible buyout. Both the Moens and Cutchalls' homes are on what's called the wet or wrong side of a proposed new dike city officials are considering to protect Grand Forks from future floods, although it isn't likely to be built for several years. Only John Little is living in his home again.
So what you get?
When Little's small, dark basement flooded, a brick wall caved in, but the water didn't reach his main floor. Little knows he was fortunate, but he did spend a miserable 5 days pumping out his basement without the benefit of heat, running water, or electricity.
That might have been one of the worst weeks of my life, working in that dungeon with that muck. And there's no easy way to glamorize what it was like in that basement. You know, I had a Coleman lantern and a flashlight and a squeegee board and a push broom and a 5-gallon bucket so that you were just hauling that muck out of there.
Little is glad to be back in his 2-story home, which he's been restoring for more than a decade. One of his teenage twin sons lives here too. The 58-year-old English professor has long planned to stay until he retires to his home state of Mississippi in a few years. He admits he's second-guessed himself a few times, not because of the flood, but because he didn't apply soon enough to get any of the so-called angel money. An anonymous donor pledged $15 million to Grand Forks flood victims to be distributed in no-strings-attached $2,000 grants. Little says he put off applying because he hates filling out forms and standing in line, and now the money's gone.
Everything that the city said and that I heard through the grapevine led me to believe that you didn't have to rush to get the money. I thought it was kind of guaranteed. So I felt like they had misled me, and that made me better enough, I'm ashamed to say, that I thought, I don't want to be here anymore. But I've since backed off of that. You know, now that you have time to think about it.
Little is also working on a novel about, ironically, North Dakotans who lost their homes to a reservoir. It's early July, nearly 3 months after the flood. Lincoln Drive is still devastated. Little has changed here, except now a few barren lots are evidence Grand Forks has begun tearing down houses. The city council has approved the first phase of a plan to buy out flood-damaged homes. Officials delayed a decision until Congress approved a disaster relief bill allocating more than $1 billion to Minnesota and the Dakotas. The latest damage estimate for Grand Forks alone is more than $500 million. The Cutchalls have decided to buy a new house 17 miles away in Amarillo, far from the flood-prone river. Sitting in front of 7 Lincoln Drive, Dennis Cutchall is resigned to leaving the place they called home for almost a decade and a half.
That's what kept us here in the neighborhood. And I guess that's finally what's making us decide to leave, because the neighborhood's going to be gone. Even if our house stayed, the neighborhood's gone. It's an old-fashioned type of neighborhood where you can sit out and wave at people, and kids would play on their bikes and everything. So that's... it's going to be tough to leave that.
Cutchall, a soft-spoken computer specialist at the University of North Dakota, says he wasn't prepared for how painful it is to see the gaps left by demolished houses nearby.
It tears you up when you see it, you know. I can still walk down in Lincoln and see the houses, and you know, I can still get tears in my eyes from it.
The Cutchalls considered leaving Grand Forks and going back to Rochester, Minnesota, where both Susan and Dennis grew up. But their daughter, Angie, won't graduate from high school for another 4 years. They also have a grown son and daughter who live in Grand Forks. Like many Lincoln Drive families, the Cutchalls and the Moens are connected through their children. The Cutchall's older daughter, Patty, is friends with the Moen's daughter, Dawn, who lives in North Carolina. The Moen's still plan to move to a new home near Dawn, but now they've decided Pat will leave in a few weeks, and Jim will join her in January. Pat Moen, like the Cutchalls, keeps thinking back as she looks to a future far from Lincoln Drive.
The old neighborhood where everybody got off, they were off Saturday, we got together and threw things on the grill, and everybody brought a little bit of something, and we all had fun. That won't be there. The only thing that will be there is my daughter and my granddaughter and my grandson.
Like many flood victims, the Moens have had their share of recovery headaches. They didn't get the full amount of flood insurance on their home because the water didn't quite reach the two bedrooms upstairs. But as Pat angrily points out, they can't use the top floor if the house is totaled. Then the city told them the home they paid $38,000 for 18 years ago is only worth $49,000 if it buys them out. The building has also been vandalized. Moen says it's hard to believe it's been almost 3 months since the flood, yet the lives of flood victims are still so unsettled.
I mean, a lot of people think everything is hunky-dory up here now. It's not. It's far from it. You know, they're still messing around with this buyout. We're all still soaking wet. And to look at it, it's going to be a while before anybody's dry.
Even John Little, enjoying a breakfast of bacon and grits in his home, says his future looks more uncertain now. He's been told he needs a new foundation, yet the city won't give him a building permit because he's in the 100-year floodplain, so he may end up being bought out after all. Little says he'd like to settle the matter, but he admits he can't really feel sorry for himself.
I do have it easy. I'm in my house. If you took the uncertainty away about what is going to happen to me, I would be over the flood. I didn't lose anything that I cried about.
It's now mid-September. Fall semester has begun, and John Little's creative writing class is discussing Flannery O'Connor's The River. The discussion soon turns closer to home.
Is anybody writing about the flood? Anybody going to?
I think it's still too soon. You know, because I thought about writing something about it, but then I wouldn't really care to sit and to go through it again or to write about it. I'd rather wait, you know, a year, two, five, who knows.
Another student says she's tired of hearing about the flood, and Little responds it will take years before people affected by the flood quit talking about it. Too much remains unsettled. In Little's case, he still doesn't know if the city will buy out his house, so he'll replace his furnace to get through the winter. Little doesn't want to leave. He says he'll never be able to buy another home with hardwood floors, a fireplace, a bay window, and a front porch for what the city will give him. A couple of blocks away from Little's house, Grand Forks Police Sergeant Jim Moen patrols his former neighborhood. Butch, as his friends call him, has been living with his brother since his wife moved to North Carolina at the end of July. He says he often drives around town trying to find former neighbors. The Moen's house looks the same, except the yard is lush with grass about a foot high. Inside, the walls are covered with different colored molds. As often as he stopped by to check on the house, Moen says it's still upsetting to see it like this.
You know, we were going to move anyhow, but, you know, it was a good, sturdy house, and, you know, it would have been good for somebody.
The Moens hired an appraiser to try to get a better buyout offer from the city, and the city agreed to the appraisal of $66,000, but the Moens haven't signed a bill of sale yet. Jim Moen has decided to head to North Carolina a month earlier and retire on his 55th birthday in December. He says it's a bittersweet feeling to leave the area where he spent most of his life, but he doubts he'll return very often.
Like I tell some people, I'll be back in the spring of 98 for the flood as a volunteer. I don't like to hear that.
Moen says he's heard talk that this winter could be even worse than the last. Meantime, the Cutchalls are getting settled in their new house in Emerado, a small town right next to the airbase that sheltered them and other flood evacuees 5 months ago.
We'll get your dad and we'll sit down and say grace so we can eat because I don't want you to go without eating.
It's a far cry from Lincoln Drive. The Cutchall's gray ranch-style home sits next to just two other houses on the edge of Emerado. Their backyard borders a field. Relaxing outside after dinner, Susan Cutchall says it's wonderful to be in a house again.
I like it out here. It's peaceful. It's less hectic, and I couldn't stand living in Grand Forks because I don't think it's changed that much since the flood. People are still up in the air as far as what's going on for next year's flood.
If it does flood next year, the Cutchalls feel safe, knowing they're 17 miles from the river. But they miss their neighbors, and Dennis misses the old house.
Doesn't feel like home yet. I miss the porch. You know, I used to sit on the porch and watch the storms. And I can't sit on the patio and watch the storms here.
The city has offered the Cutchalls $59,000 for their Lincoln Drive home, which they think is a little low. Even if they accept it, they don't expect to get a buyout check until next year. Their flood insurance went to pay off the old mortgage and put a down payment on this house. So now, in their 40s, Susan and Dennis are starting payments on a new, bigger mortgage. Thousands of miles away, Pat Moan is adapting to Kannapolis, North Carolina, on the outskirts of Charlotte. A new wind chime hangs in the backyard of the Moans' new home, a double-wide trailer on an acre and a half of mostly wooded land. It's mid-October, and although she's been apart from her husband for nearly 3 months, Moan has the joy of seeing her grandchildren, 3-year-old Taylor and 1-year-old Dakota, nearly every day.
You want the silly
soap? Moan has started a new job at the Walmart here, transferring from the Grand Forks store, and says her coworkers have made her feel at home. Her two pug dogs keep her company, and Moan is also getting to know her new neighbors, talking to them over the back fence.
Did you get your crepe myrtles? Is that what they are?
Yeah, the 4-crepe myrtles.
Where did you get them?
Moan says she thinks she and her husband made the right decision to leave Grand Forks, especially now that their former neighbors are scattered all over town and the buyout is dragging on. Some residents who think buyout offers are too low have filed a class action lawsuit in federal court, claiming the city's program doesn't properly compensate homeowners. Moan isn't part of the lawsuit, but says she doesn't blame residents for suing. She says she doesn't miss Grand Forks, just her neighbors of 18 years.
There are people there that I care very deeply for, and that's what hurts. The town itself I don't miss. No, not from what I see what's going on. That isn't the Grand Forks that I moved there 20 years ago to see.
Moan carries a lot of bitterness toward the city of Grand Forks. She's convinced city officials had some warning the river was going to get as high as it did and could have given residents time to get their belongings out. She thinks the city should be doing more to help elderly residents who lost their homes and can't afford a new mortgage. And Moan says it makes her sick to think their home hasn't been demolished yet. She considers it a health hazard. It's late November back in Grand Forks. A layer of snow covers Lincoln Drive, the only sound, the crackle of leaves blowing across the snow. The Moans' home is still there, still guarded by yellow police tape. A few blocks away, the Cutchalls' home hasn't been demolished either. Dennis Cutchall stops by every day at noon to check on the house because he says they're still liable until the city buys it. But he says he doesn't like the neighborhood's emptiness.
The other day when we went to the house to pick up a few last things, we pulled into the driveway, and all there was down there was a set of rabbit tracks. You know, and it just kind of struck me, you know, that's who's living down there now.
In the Cutchalls' new house in Emerado, 14-year-old Angie goes online to talk to friends. She says she doesn't get to see them as much now that they've moved from Grand Forks. She says she doesn't really miss the house she grew up in, yet she doesn't like thinking about their old neighborhood.
I don't go back at all. I don't like to, because I stayed bummed out for a long time. So
Dennis Cutchall still has trouble sleeping and says he occasionally has nightmares about fighting the flood nearly 7 months after it occurred. He says he doesn't think there will ever come a time when he and Susan feel like they're over the flood.
I think it's too traumatic to ever get over completely. I think we'll recover emotionally and financially and everything. I think it's always going to be there.
For John Little, a sense of closure will come when he's settled in a new house. The city has offered him about $52,000 for his home on Chestnut Street, not enough to buy a comparable house in Grand Forks. So Little says he'll likely have to rent for a few years until he retires in Mississippi. He's less anxious than some to see the buyout program move more quickly.
You know, I don't have anything to look forward to that makes me want to rush. I want to stay here as long as I can.
In the end, Little actually got $2,000 from the Angel Fund, that pool of money he thought he'd missed out on. The city sent him a letter saying its records showed Little had substantial damage, yet hadn't received any money from the fund. Little says he was happy to even receive the letter and delighted to get the full $2,000 grant. Although Little Street hasn't changed as dramatically as Lincoln Drive, he is losing his next-door neighbors, whose basement was a popular hangout, so much so it had a name, The Ledge.
I can find other community. It won't be the same. I can't replace Billy and Cher. Now, there are no other Billys and Cherins in the world. But I can find another community.
And ultimately, so will the Moans and the Cutchalls and the other residents forced to relocate. The city will eventually destroy hundreds of homes as part of its flood mitigation plan. The flood of 97 chased 50,000 people from Grand Forks, many of whom lost their homes and neighborhoods, and far more who lost their possessions. A lot was made at the time that no one was killed in the disaster, but the story of the Red River Valley flood is a tapestry of individual tragedies, something Pat Moan says unless you experienced, you'll never truly understand.
And everybody says, well, I'd be grateful you didn't lose a life, but you did. We lost life in Lincoln Drive. We lost a neighborhood, and a close neighborhood.
One, Moan says, can never be recaptured. I'm Laura McCullum, Minnesota Public Radio.